This is The Geek Dads, the podcast of GeekDad.com on the Wired Blog Network. This is episode 76, Bacon on a Stick. Hello again, everyone. You found it. We're back. This is The Geek Dads, episode number 76, and I am Ken Denby, editor of GeekDad.com. It's like some kind of patriotic episode. We have a small but valiant crew heading the good ship Geek Dad tonight. First, of course, is Mr. Matt Blum. How you doing this week, Matt?
Oh, I'm doing pretty well, Ken. Yeah, went to a little convention up in Rockville, Maryland on Sunday.
Okay.
Called Intervention, mostly geared towards...
You had an intervention this weekend? What was the problem?
Mostly geared towards webcomics and such, but it's it was the first year they've run it, so I thought I'd give it a shot. It was fun. My kids had a blast, mostly because they got a whole bunch of free stuff, which was cool.
That will make kids happy. Excellent.
Yes.
Excellent. Awesome. Well, we can talk that a little bit about that. Obviously, I'll have Jonathan and I will both have reports from our amazing PAX adventures a week ago.
Oh, yes.
So plenty to talk about there. Speaking of which, hey, Jonathan, how's it going?
All right. We're dealing with some sick kids again. Yeah.
What did you bring home from PAX?
I brought home...
I mean, that you gave to your kids and now they're sick.
Yeah, it wasn't swine flu.
We were safe, you know. We were smart. We did the elbow bump thing with everyone.
Yep. We didn't get to elbow bump Will Wheaton though.
No, did not. I got Joko and Storm. But that's as far as my elbow bumping went. But cool enough. All right, guys. Well, it's just a nice, relaxing Geek Dad tonight. We'll take it easy. You know, lay back, relax, drink a little something, and the dulcet tones of the Geek Dads will carry you away. So PAX. I guess we could just start with PAX, and we'll get that over with. You know, obviously, hopefully people saw our coverage last week when we all got back, but just have to say, from my point of view, greatest convention experience I have ever had.
It was pretty cool. I was thinking about writing up a Comic-Con versus PAX. Because they're very, very different conventions.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just sheer scale and...
Oh, yeah.
And stuff. PAX, I think, is definitely much more focused.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, but... I mean, Comic-Con is it's... A whole lot of fun, but it is all over the place as far as, you know, subject matter and, you know, who's there and what are they doing there. Whereas, you know, PAX is very much, you know, you've got your computer games and you've got your tabletop gaming and that's, you know, pretty much it.
But that's enough. I mean, I always think the funniest thing is you just watch, they even have, you know, there are spaces in the lobbies that just, they've got big beanbag chairs just all over the place, and people just go there to crash and play their DSs.
Yeah.
Which is just hilarious. You know, you're walking by, you're headed to a panel, whatever. There's 50 people just laying there playing their DSs. Like, the only excuse to come out was just to, you know, go sit with your personal video game machine and play. But...
Well, you know, they did have some tournaments going on, so you never know. Maybe some of them were sort of engaged with each other.
That could be.
Did they have a retro video gaming room? They had one at PAX East, that's why I asked.
I saw some. I mean, I know they had a, you know, free console play area and PC play area, but I don't remember seeing one that was specifically retro gaming.
Okay, yeah, they had one. I think they teamed up with a Boston area one, a museum. So they had like old arcade games and old gaming systems, like
very cool.
Old Atari and such. So I spent a fair bit of time in there. reliving my youth, you know.
Don't know what that could be about. Yeah, the joke, of course, is always, you know what? When we were kids, video games with two lines and a dot, and we liked it that way. What's all this three-dimensional stuff? I don't get it. Yeah, so, like, the D&D experience was, I think, just the most amazing. If anyone... Actually, I just watched the Totally Rad Show episode. They were up. They were at the con too. Never saw them anywhere. Supposedly they had a panel the afternoon after our panel, but never saw those guys running around. But they got to go and hang out at the D&D bus too, which was, you know, just there was a D&D bus. I mean,
yeah.
How about that? It was. We didn't actually spend that much time in the D&D bus, except everybody putting their stuff, plugging their stuff in to recharge. But getting to go out and so Jonathan, maybe you should explain a little bit how you lost your D&D virginity.
Well, yeah, I'm you know, we hit Star Trek: The Next Generation earlier this year, and now I've played D&D. So maybe next I'll watch an episode of Doctor Who.
We're gonna get you. That'll be the trifecta. You got it.
Yeah, I mean, we had so, you know, I know you play with, or you're starting to play now with your sons, but you played right. years ago, and I know Dave Banks said he'd played D&D. Oh, he said it'd probably been about what 20 years since he'd played the last time,
and about then the we same had, for you me. Know,
and then we had Michael Harrison, who, you know, plays regularly now. And so the four of us got to try out an encounter with the red box, which is the D&D essentials. It was run by Mike Merles.
Yeah.
Of Wizards of the Coast.
It was like one of the lead designers on the new rule set.
Yeah. So he, you know, he came over and you know, we got to sit down and they brought us, you know, Doritos and beef jerky and things like that. Offered us Mountain Dew.
And they had it all figured out.
Yeah. And he had some pre-made characters. So we wouldn't have to, you know, so just we could just jump right into doing the encounter and, you know, used all of the little maps and tokens and things from the red box and, you know, kind of just got us started. So, yeah, it was interesting. I mean, I had heard, you know, I was familiar with a lot of the terms, but, you know, probably I wouldn't have been able to explain exactly how everything fit together. You know, it made sense. Mike did a good job of walking us through it. And then, you know, we got to go in. Well, we were after the necromancer and, what, following some orcs into this cellar. And yeah,
it was, you know, and that was actually, you know, I've been reading the new rules and I've been trying to run my kids with them a little bit and getting used to the whole new system. But it's an interesting contrast with the new set that really does. It brings the gameplay up so that you don't have to do as much work in the books and calculating things, and the power card system, the way you sort of prepare everything your character can do, you know, skills and traits and all this stuff are very simply laid out, and you can have them all in a small deck of cards that you carry with you. You have your set that are your daily abilities. You have your set that of things that you can do once per encounter, and you have the set that's at your at will powers, and you have them as cards. You lay them out in front of you, and you know, when you use one that's like per encounter, then you just turn it over so you can't use it anymore. But they all lay out what the ability does, and you know, because all of us, they've got, you know, character sheet generators or manipulators online now. You don't have to do all the math and write it all down yourself. You can pick stuff and create your character you know, the way we all dream, you know, the way I dreamed 10 or 15 years ago when we were just getting into creating very sophisticated spreadsheets to do this mm-hmm. stuff. I remember my buddy Peter, who was just one of the best DMs I ever got to play with, and he had developed this, I think this was for like 3.5 level rules, either third edition or 3.5, and he had created this character sheet that had all these macros and tables built into it so that you would just go to the front of the character sheet, put your stats in, boom, all your rolls were set, and put your, you know, pick your armor, boom, sets your AC, and pick your skills, boom, calculates all your rolls based on your attributes and all this stuff. And it would lay that all out, and it was just, and you'd go off to the right of the spreadsheet and you'd see where all these, you know, he'd brought in every single spell, every single skill, everything else, and worked out how they would affect your calcs, how your rolls and everything, and then the front page would figure it all. And it was an amazing tool. And now, you know, they've gotten there just with, you know, a web-based tool to do it. And with the new, and so you can actually go online, you can create your character in the tool and then have it print out your character and have it actually print out all your power cards. So you just print out and cut out your own deck and then you come ready to play with us. And I think they've done so much to reduce the barrier to entry to the game so that, you know, if you're going to go play a game, you're not going with the assumption that you're going to spend the first hour rolling up a new character if you don't already have one. It's, you can go spend 10 minutes and have your character ready to play. So hopefully, you know, hopefully that just means it's going to become more and more popular. And hopefully that means we can, you know, find the time to actually play it ourselves in our, you know, in our parental years. We can actually start taking our kids through some stuff. And it's not something where, you know, I need to go spend 6 hours, you know, drafting stuff up. You know, they're making the tools so much easier to use so that you can just get straight to playing. And then, you know, it's all about working with your imagination.
Yeah. And the, yeah, I should also mention the Castle Ravenloft board game,
which is fantastic.
Have you played that with your kids yet?
We've done it once so far, and that's even the next step down to creating a gateway drug to D&D.
Yeah, I got to play it once after you'd left. We right. found Andrew from Giant Fire Breathing Robot, and he had a set of the Castle Ravenloft board game. And yeah, I mean, it's definitely, it's got the pre-made characters. It uses the cards for your different abilities. You flip them over when you need to. And I love the fact that you build the board as you go with these little modular tiles.
I know, that's the genius part. There's like 30, they're sort of like puzzle pieces, but they're dungeon tiles. And you start at the front door of whatever part of the dungeon you're in. And then as you step to the edge of a tile, you pick a new one on your turn, and that opens up the next step. And then you pick a monster card or an encounter card to see what's there.
Or both. Yeah.
And that, I mean, definitely,
you know, I could see having done the one encounter with Mike Merles and then played that, I could see the similarities, but definitely it's been made into, you know, this board game that comes with the different scenarios, but doesn't require a dungeon master to run it for you.
Right.
It's all sort of prepared for you. You know, you don't have as much of the, I think the role playing aspect. I mean, obviously it's up to you.
right.
But that was something that I think, you know, that Mike did really well when he was describing what was happening. He wouldn't just say, well, you know, there you walk in, there's a room and a pile of crates. Like, he would actually describe things, and you know, as you walk in, and you know, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
hear sort of the storytelling aspect of it.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, and that's what makes a really great DM, is someone that can really, you know, build the story for you and be descriptive and even improvise on the fly to make things that much more, you know, just enveloping in the story, which I love.
We need somebody needs to write a list for the blog about, you know, 10 tips to be a better DM.
Sounds like a Michael Harrison post if there ever there was one.
But. It does.
we'll put it on his tally sheet. Oh, that's cool. So, all right. So, you know, we'll. So, Jonathan, you were like Mr. Board Game Discovery guy.
Oh, yeah.
And the board games were just amazing there. So, tell us a couple of the really cool board games you found.
All right. Well, you saw my long list of board games I got to see. You know, one I was pretty excited to see was Flying Frog Productions. They make the Last Night on Earth zombie board game. And that's one that I've owned for a while and have really enjoyed. And they've got a new one coming out called Invasion from Outer Space, which is, it's sort of a 1950s, you know, space invasion movie, if you picture that. You know, like the Mars Attacks, guys with the big brains, you know, exposed brains. Except what's even better about their game is that they invade, one person plays the Martians, and then you get one or a couple people playing the humans fighting off the invasion. But it's not just any humans. It's, you know, they land in a circus. So you've got, you know, the Hannah the Fire Breather and Jojo the Dancing Bear. yeah, which is great. It's like now you can be a bear in a tutu. That can be your character for this game. So that's awesome. they do a real good job with their games. I mean, they feel like when you play the games, they feel like, you know, sort of a B movie. The zombie game feels like a zombie movie, and this one, you know, is going to feel like, you know, your 1950s, you know, sci-fi movie. So that was a lot of fun. The Catan folks, you know, Settlers of Catan, they have a new one called Settlers of America.
Yeah, I heard about that.
And we did get a chance to play that one, and that is, it's really impressive. I mean, you've got a whole lot of different things. It's really got different rule set to it. And so if you've played Settlers of Catan, you'll have a good basis for learning this one. But they really changed the way the game works. You know, so instead of you're building your settlements and building roads out and increasing where you can build settlements to, in this one, you actually build, I guess they're settlers, you know, the little covered wagon. And then you use resources to send them out. And so you don't actually have to build the roads yet. They're just little, you know, they're on trails. And so you send your settlers out. And then when they hit a site for a city, then you build that. So you just founded that city.
Oh.
And in the meantime, you're also building railroads between the cities so you can deliver goods. And the trick is, you have to deliver goods to an opponent city. You have to deliver your goods to an opponent city. So it doesn't help you to build a big network of railroads that doesn't connect to anybody else. You've got to connect to other people. Mm. And then instead of the normal like victory point conditions, the goal is just to get rid of all of your goods before everybody else does. So it's, you know, there are some things that that get simplified and some things are a little more complex, but I really enjoyed it. I mean, it's this enormous board, and you start off sort of on the eastern half of the U.S., and then as you move, resources in the east deplete. So you get the whole, you know, Manifest Destiny westward expansion. Like, you have to move out west because the resources on the east aren't going to last the whole game.
Are there Native American tribes that you have to kick off the land before you can use it?
No, I think they're already gone. I think they are. Yeah.
I was just wondering how realistic they were.
So it's a politically correct game, and they've, you know, totally whitewashed the whole dilemma of the name.
Actually, I mean, it was kind of interesting. Actually, I mean, I picked up the manual because I wanted to check. You know, I got, they have development cards, you know, the way the old one does, that allow you to do different things. And I was like, I want to check how this card works. And I went to look through the manual, and instead of, you know, the expected, here's how you play this card, it was, here's the history of, you know, railroads in the U.S., you know, because it was like the engineer card that allows you to build two rails. And instead of getting just, you know, here's how you use the card, it was like a little history lesson on, you know, the railroad companies in the U.S. So lots of history, actually a lot of history included in the game. So it's pretty interesting. I'd like to, spend a little more time looking through it.
Does it sound like it takes as long to play a game of that as it does to take to play a game of regular Catan?
Probably. I mean, it might be a little bit longer. It was our first time playing. We played a 4-player game, and I think we went for maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours.
Okay.
So, I'm sure, it could go faster once you know what you're doing. But it does seem like a slightly longer game than Settlers of Catan.
Well, then we all got to play. What was the game we played on Friday night?
Thunderstone.
Thunderstone. Now, it was a cool game. I have some problems with the card design.
Yeah.
For playability, but go ahead and describe Thunderstone because we did have a lot of fun with that.
Yeah.
So well, I mostly had fun because I won. But
well, yes. Ken, he scored something like what seven of your 17 points on your last turn.
Yeah. Pretty much.
So that was a well won victory there. Thunderstone, it's a deck building game. And actually for the rest of the weekend, I did discover, apparently this is a growing, genre. You get a whole bunch of cards and you sort of randomize them a little bit to set up a dungeon with, a couple different types of monsters in it. And then you have a village, which is a whole bunch of cards, including, heroes that you can get, weapons, tools, things like that.
And magic.
And magic, right, spells. Everyone starts off with some basic cards, very basic cards, like, a couple militia and, dagger and a torch. And what you do is you got to go into the village, start building up your supplies, trying to hire these heroes to come with you, so that you could get enough cards to go into the dungeon and try to take on these monsters. But the trick is that every time on your turn, you get to take the top 6 cards off of your deck and use those. And so it's really the strategy is, how do you get a good mix so that when you draw any 6 cards, you've got a good chance of having the right combination to go into the dungeon.
Right.
Because every time
you go through the deck, you then shuffle it and start again.
Right.
So you could get any combination of 6 cards at any given time. Hopefully every time that you've gone to the village and gotten more supplies, you've gotten some powerful stuff that does each of the different things you need to then go fight monsters. So every single time you pull a deck for a turn, hopefully you've got a good shot at being able to go to the go fight a monster and kill it and gain an experience point.
Right. And so, it's sort of a dungeon crawl game. It's not nearly as, complex as Dungeons and Dragons. But it makes for a pretty interesting game. I did find we played another time, later that weekend, and the mix of, village cards and monster cards can really make or break the experience. We played another one using some of the expansion cards, and it was rough because we had some monsters that he was like, oh, nobody can defeat this monster. And so it just sort of sat there unless someone wanted to sacrifice a turn and, go and let the monster beat him up a little bit. Because then the monster goes away and another one replaces him, even if you lose. But, we had some pretty rough monsters to deal with and not really the right tools to go after them.
I thought the game was great, and it has, it has a good sort of, you build up, then everybody has a chance to, actually start going after monsters and stuff. And from those victories, you can build a little bit stronger until finally you get that shot to end the game, and then whoever's got the highest point wins. But
right.
The problem I had with it, and it's why I would not buy it and would not play it with my kids, is the way the cards are designed. You it would take playing it a number of times before you got used to what each of the different point values were on the face of the card, because Some things right. were gold, and some things were your like attack strength, and some things were your how much light you were carrying, and there were like five different number values that could be there. They didn't have any iconography with them. They didn't have anything that indicated what they were. So it was very easy for a first timer just to not get it whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a high barrier to entry, I think.
Yeah, that's definitely, I mean, you know, they're little tiny, tiny numbers. And some of them, I mean, it's like, you know, on one card, on one type of card, this number is how heavy the weapon is. And on another card, this, you know, it's something else.
Right.
But it's in the same location. I think the card design, you know, definitely could use some work. I did overhear like a couple people, you know, talking about, you know, the two other deck building games that I didn't actually get a chance to play, but one's called Dominion, and that one has been around for a while and is, you know, pretty popular one. And the other one, which is, I think it's new this year, is called Ascension. And I heard some pretty good buzz about Ascension, saying that, you know, it fixes a lot of things that people didn't like about Thunderstone. So, you know, I may look that one up eventually.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. Any other pack stuff before we, you know, totally drive Matt away from being part of it?
I was going to say Dominion, by the way, is a very good game. It won Game of the Year in Germany in 2009, I believe. And there actually is a couple of different sets have come out with for it recently.
Right. Yeah.
And it's also a pretty good like entry game. It doesn't require a lot of experience to be able to figure out the strategy and all. So good game.
Other
mention.
Yeah. Last couple of highlights were, of course, we had a Geek Dad panel. We had like 340 people in a packed room, and it was simply awesome. And
with Annoyatrons.
Oh, that was the best part. So Think Geek had sent along a whole bunch of Annoyatrons, you know, most of which to give away. Mm-hmm. And so we opened up about 10 or a dozen of them before the show and hid them under random seats in the theater. So that all the way through, there were random noises going off in the audience.
We told them towards the beginning that they were there, and some, you know, a lot of people checked under their seats, and someone pulled them off. But there were a couple that we kept hearing throughout the entire the entire talk. Oh, and then I forget Saturday evening. We were sitting around playing a game, so this was, you know, the end of the day, and this woman walks up and spots us sitting there playing a game and says, "I've got one of these Annoyatrons that I picked up this morning at your talk. How do you turn it off?" She'd had it in her backpack the entire day with it going.
That is way too awesome. That is great. Our job was done there. We succeeded. Full of win. And then we got to see the Acquisitions Incorporated D&D game live. Live celebrity D&D with Will Wheaton and Gabe and Tycho and it was just so much fun and so hilarious. Those guys were great. And totally sold me on the idea that someone like G4 needs to do, you know, live celebrity D&D as a show, because people would so get into it. It's so funny. People are playing D&D and you get the right mix of people, it is hilarious. It is just so funny. So nobody else does it. Someday I will, and we'll get, you know, 300 viewers and it'll be great.
Local cable access.
Exactly. I am Ken, and tonight, Celebrity D&D here on cable channel 263A. Getting out to the larger Greenville area. And
I noticed, have you guys seen the video that that Paul and Storm made?
No, I haven't actually sat and watched it.
If you go to paulandstorm.com, it's up there. It's pretty cute.
We saw them running around. In fact, at one point, we were walking down one of the streets and saw Paul running up with a megaphone and like, "That man is dangerous." And he's going, "Shh, shh, shh. No, no, be quiet." So there was tomfoolery going on.
Yes, it was very cute. They even have the whole story of how they timed it and how they got everybody organized. And
nice.
I do have to share one other pack story.
Okay.
It was after, you know, we had taken Ken back to the hotel because he was taking off, you know, at noon on Sunday. And Dave and Michael and I, you know, were coming down. We took our stuff from Ken's room, put it all in Dave's room. And then we said, okay, you know, we're going to head back out for lunch. And we got to the elevator and hit the down button and the doors open. And who should be standing there but Will Wheaton with his suitcases. And so we sort of just walked in quietly.
With and, your Geek Dad shirts on.
Yes. Actually, you know, I was the only one wearing one at the time.
Oh!
But I still had my my sweatshirt on, and we said hello, you know, and that was about it. And I said, you know, are you leaving already? Because it was, you know, it was only noon. And he said something about, no, I'm just, you know, stashing my bags. I got to check out later. And then he saw the sweatshirt and he goes, oh, you know, do you write for Geek Dad? And he said, oh, we all do. And he said, I love Geek Dad. And we, you know, I was like, oh, that was very nice. We asked if we could get a picture with him. He said, well, you know, fine, but I want to, you know, try to keep it quiet because, you know, I don't want people to start catching me. So we found a little spot in the lobby and, you know, we got pictures with Will Wheaton. And then, you know, said, thanks a lot, you know. Enjoy the rest of PAX. And he said, and we had, you know, we had to tell everyone because Will Wheaton says, thanks, Geek Dads, because thanks for making the internet a little more awesome. So.
That is so special.
That is very cool.
I think we need to get somebody to like cross stitch that into us.
And then we had to, you know, resist the urge to like chase after him and say, you know, hey, we're going to have lunch. No.
Bad idea. And Jenny in the chat room says she knows how to cross stitch.
All right. You'll have to. Dave probably has the exact wording of whatever it was he said. But
I can picture it now, Jenny. A cross stitch sampler, and you have like a cross stitch representation of Will in the clown shirt, clown sweater. And he's speaking, and then the words are there. Yeah, totally. 8-bit, yeah. Cross-stitch is basically 8-bit needlework.
Yeah.
Geekiest way of putting it possible.
There you go. that needs to be posted somewhere. Cross-stitch is 8-bit needlework, yeah. All right, I think that's it for PAX. We're through it. Best thing ever. So that's awesome. Oh, do you realize I already have the 8-bit clown sweater pattern worked out? Too huge to stitch, though. Well, maybe we need to get one of those punch rugs instead.
Hook. What was it? Oh yeah, those little latch hook.
Latch hook rug. Do it in a latch hook rug. Because I know Will's already got a velvet painting of himself, but you know. You do a latch hook rug of Will in the clown sweater. Anyway, all right. So we've already eaten up quite a bit of the time with that. Matt, was there anything you actually wanted to talk about tonight?
Well, I've heard the rumors that they're actually going to put out the iPad 2 before the holidays, which. I think it's a little odd because usually
it does seem a little odd.
Usually Apple has a year cycle on things, so you'd expect it like next April.
Yeah, they usually go through a year cycle, and I don't think there's going to be an iPad 2. What the rumors I am hearing about are though that it's going to be, you know, like in wide release at Best Buy's and at Target.
Yeah, I heard that too.
So that might be, you know, people are getting things crossed up and they're just hearing that it's going to, you know, they're going to go wide with it for the holidays.
But it's already at Best Buy.
But it's limited at Best Buy, is my understanding. It's not every one.
Okay,
so they might be going back. I don't know. It's hard to tell.
Yeah, but well, I mean, I think one of the things that people think might spur them to do it is that they're trying to make everything be able to do FaceTime. Now that they, I mean, they got the new iPod Touch can do FaceTime. Right. And of course, the iPhone 4 can do FaceTime. So, but of course, for the iPad to be able to do it, it would need a camera.
Right.
So,
well, maybe. You never know. Yeah. You never know. But now, you know, I have to just do a backup or just sort of a throwback to 2 weeks ago when we were talking with David Hewlett, and we were sort of projecting because the next day was going to be all the big Apple announcements. So they did announce the Apple TV, and it was a lot less than... Wait, what? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were saying something.
I just was saying, yeah.
Yeah. So they announced the Apple TV, and it was somewhat less than people thought it was going to be. It didn't have apps on it or anything like that. So a lot of people have actually sort of you know, put it down because they thought it they've missed this opportunity to make the Apple TV this iOS-based desktop box that then everybody could write apps for it, and you know that would be awesome because then you could, you know, get a specific app. You'd have a la carte television basically as a potential that way. And I think the thing that has been underplayed with it is the AirPlay feature that they look to be rolling into all of the iOS devices as an update, you know, as part of either 4.1 and 4.2 when it comes out. Is that any of your iOS devices will be able to stream to the Apple TV, which means you don't have to have a device that, you know, the TV doesn't have to have the apps. Your iPhone, your iPod Touch, and your iPad will have the apps. And so, yeah, so that assumes you have to have, you know, both, but that also means any media that's on your devices, you can play on there. Any, you know, and then so the apps like, you know, the Netflix app is on your iPhone or your iPad. The Hulu Plus app is on there. The ESPN app is on there already. If those apps simply get updated with you know, a new API call, they can then output and stream to the Apple TV. And there you go. You have apps. You can get apps that specifically, you know, that give you your a la carte television possibility. So I actually think they may have made it easier because of the set-top box. You know, if you assume that everybody who likes to buy Apple stuff already has either an iPhone, an iPad, or an iPod Touch, then $99 for this extra little thing that makes them all play cool stuff on your TV is not a big deal.
That's true.
So... Yeah, once again, conjecture, and but I'm, you know, really, really think that could be the way they're going to do it. And if so, I think that's awesome because, holy cow!
Have you tried out Ping at all?
Played a little bit with it. Haven't found enough people on there into the, you know, down tempo electronica stuff that I'm into. So. I keep getting recommendations to follow Lady Gaga, and I'm like, nah, I don't think so.
Yeah. Wait, gosh, no. Not a huge fan?
Well, you know, I actually get what she's doing, and I totally appreciate it. I'm just not into that sort of pop music right now. But actually, you know, I love how she's doing this kind of... her whole career is an homage to Elton John and Barbara Streisand in the 70s, you know. It's glam rock and over the top, you know, it's a little bit of Bjork, it's a little bit of Madonna, all of that. And but from what I understand of her background is, you know, she is a talented songwriter and musician.
Mm-hmm.
And so the rest of it is just having fun and putting on spectacle, which is great. And if she succeeds at it, fantastic.
I think she has so far.
Absolutely.
It's hard to argue with the kind of success she's had so far.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, some of her songs I can kind of, you know, take or leave, but some of them are actually kind of fun to listen to, and they certainly get stuck in your head. But,
until you listen to a good Rush song to knock it back out again.
Sorry, I was just reading in the chat room, Dan Donahue was suggesting that I should wear a bacon suit. Like,
that's your next Odyssey post.
Nobody wants to see that. No.
I know. You need to make a woven bacon hat. You need to take it beyond just food, Matt. Now it needs to be clothing.
Yeah. I mean, there already is clothing you can get that has like bacon print on it, but not actually made out of bacon. Seems like it'd be a waste of bacon, though.
Yes.
Yes. You know.
On the other hand, you know, you'd have a snack with you wherever you went.
Yes, that's true. Not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
And depending upon where you were going, you know, it could be reason for being attacked.
That's true, too.
Don't make the mistake of wearing the bacon yarmulke.
Well, also, you don't want to wear it, you know, like near the dog pound. That would be
right. Right.
Yeah.
All right. We got any other new stuff, or do we want to do some couple of posts and get out of here?
I think we could just do a couple of posts and call it a podcast.
Oh. However, we will. I would just notice Dan Donahue saying that in other news, I have decided Warehouse 13 is far more awesome than first thought. Kudos to you, sir. You have been enlightened.
The first part of the season finale was pretty cool.
Yeah, haven't watched it yet here.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to say anything more. It was pretty cool.
I mean, after the hint from last week's that what's her name, Mrs.
Fredericks.
Mrs. Fredericks is, you know, at least, I don't know, 100 years old.
Yes, well, they still don't really explain much of that, but she is heavily involved.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yes. You know, it's a funny show because it is, in many ways, a little bit like Eureka and a couple of the others. That it's lightweight. It has a great sense of humor. But I love, you know, these shows. A show that does something like this would so often get caught up in doing like the big name artifacts.
Yeah,
you know, stuff that made, you know, like, you know, they did they had Excalibur as like a throwaway at one point, and a couple things like that, but the ones they've actually come up with as major plot points have been just hilarious and wonderful and imaginative. You know, Man Ray's camera
they found, you know, people who were real but aren't exceedingly well known,
right,
which I think is pretty cool too. So they actually have some real world stuff woven into it. I can't say I'm totally thrilled with what they were doing with, you know, H.G. Wells, but I mean,
yeah, interesting decision.
It's clever and but it's all right. I do like in the previews they also showed, so I'm not really giving anything away, that they Egypt is involved, and you find that Warehouse 2 was in ancient Egypt. They had to close it down quickly when the Romans took over Egypt,
which then suggests that the warehouse system is older than the Secret Service.
Suggests.
And why is Secret Service in charge of it now?
Yeah, I don't know. That's not made clear. And of course, you know, logically, it should be called something else, since English as a language did not exist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 31 BC. But but that's neither here nor there. It's
let's not nitpick the details. Just enjoy.
It was clever. Did you see the one before with the time travel?
Yes.
Did you see the flux capacitor?
No. Where was it?
Oh, if you look when they're showing you the time machine, there's a big flux capacitor on the wall.
Nice.
As part of it, and you know, if you see it, it looks exactly like the one, only bigger.
Well done.
Exactly like the one that's in the DeLorean.
Well done. You know, a show I need to do. I should do a post about this because I don't know if a lot of people are watching it because it's on. What is it on? Is it on?
What show are you talking about?
Now my brain. You had to ask me, so now I've got, what history?
Describe.
Shoot, no, the plot of the show is these three kids who actually go to a prep school that is connected to the Smithsonian Museum of Natural History, Unnatural History, yeah, something like that. So yeah, so the plot of the show is that, yeah, three kids go to this prep school. One of them was this kid, is like the cousin, who has just come to the school, and but he had grown up, his parents were archaeologists, and basically grew up everywhere, all over the planet, has learned amazing things. So he's like the total amazing, can do anything, but total fish out of water in this Washington prep school. But is the total adventure buff and always loves getting his nose into the mysteries and stuff. And then his cousin, who's son of the dean and kind of the nerd, and then the third friend, who's the girl who's, you know, extremely bright, but you know, and so they're this trio, and you know, part of the job of the kids is you work in the doom rooms, which is the place where they keep all the undocumented artifacts, and so there's just, you know, a stream of, you know, wacky historically based stuff comes up. So there, I mean, there's a little bit of Warehouse 13 to it, but it's actually, it's really well done. It's sort of like Warehouse 13 for tweens.
Cool.
But we're totally enjoying it as a family. So I really should plug it. And I'm trying to remember if it's is it Disney Channel or is it?
No, it's Cartoon Network.
Cartoon Network. Yeah, it's Cartoon Network.
It's their second live action show they've ever done. Yeah, they did a brief a couple years ago.
I guess it's really well done. The characters are well drawn, and the adventures they're getting into are fun. The kid who plays the adventuresome kid is very charming, and so we're loving it as a family. So I got to do a post on that.
Yeah, I wish I'd known about that. That's pretty cool. I haven't really heard about that at all. And I wonder if they actually filmed anything in Washington.
I get a feeling it's probably a complete Vancouver production, but you know.
Yeah, or Toronto. It's always Vancouver or Toronto.
Yeah.
Yeah, like been watching the show Covert Affairs on USA. Which is pretty good show. But it's supposed to take place mostly in the DC area, because she's the main character played by Piper Perabo is supposed to be a CIA agent working at CIA headquarters, which I used to drive by every day on my way to work. And when except for the establishing shots, it never looks anything at all like DC area. Like, it's so clearly not. I always especially love when they go to the subway and it's very clearly, you know, doesn't look remotely like DC subway.
I remember we watched some show. It might have even been like Psych or something. But, you know, after we had been to Vancouver and noticed, so in Canada, when you have a green light, it blinks.
Okay.
It's a Canadian thing. And then, you know, some point we're watching like Psych and, you know, they're in Santa Barbara. Yeah. And they, you know, driving down the street and the green light's blinking. Interesting. And then someone drops a comment about Japa Dogs, which is a total Vancouver experience. We talked about that last time. But anyway, so, all right, quick post of the week, and then we should get out of here because we've already burned through our time. Jonathan?
I liked Curtis's post today about the robot sidekicks. Top 10 most memorable robot sidekicks. Particularly because, you know, I actually just rewatched The Black Hole recently. And, definitely, you know, Vincent and Bob and then, you know, Maximilian all show up there. But yeah, I mean, just overall, it's a great, you know, a great post, especially with his, you know, necessary restrictions to shorten the list that he got to, you know, got to pick out some of the more obscure or, I know. I mean, C-3PO and R2 are certainly not obscure, but
they have to
be on the list.
they had to be there. You can't have something with robot sidekicks and not have 3PO and R2D2. It's just not acceptable.
Tweaky was fun.
Specifically excluded Tweaky
because he was just too cheesy, he says. So
bitty 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 bitty. Aww.
Just too cheesy.
Just too cheesy.
It's just because it was Mel Blanc I put him on the list. All right.
Yeah, but Buck Rogers, really? I mean, so cheesy, really.
Have you seen that the James Crowley, the guy who did all those self-produced, like, you know, third season, fourth season of Star Trek is now doing his own Kickstarter funded Buck Rogers series.
I did not know that.
Yeah. He's actually got the license from the estate, from the family that owns the name and everything.
Huh. Well, it's not like anybody else is doing anything with it. So.
No. And yes, Jenny, Gil Gerard was the man. And I've met Erin Gray at a con. She's very cool. Sorry. I was getting
misty.
Matt, post of the week.
I was going to mention Jonathan's post from today about the video games. The study about video games and playing them, making you better or potentially worse about making decisions quickly. I mean, I have to think there's some validity to that because.
I think.
It definitely.
I agree that there's probably some, there is something to it. And I'm sure, I'm fairly sure that if they're doing, they had some sort of control groups and, statistical analysis going on there. But the descriptions that I was able to find of the study, it's like, it's missing something. What am I missing here? And I haven't read any, good explanations of how they got around some of those issues.
Yeah, there's definitely some of them, because you also have to think that a lot of video games will teach you that if you make the wrong decision, you get to try again immediately and make the right one the next time, which is not necessarily the lesson you want people to learn about life. There's a lot of decisions you make where you're stuck with the consequences, whether you like it or not.
I could just go back to my last save.
I want to do over, man.
Yes, life would be so much nicer if we could just restore.
Sorry, Your Honor, I'd like a do over.
So I guess life is more like NetHack.
All right, cool. Yeah, I actually heard they were even talking about that on MacBreak or something today. So that one got out there, but. I mean, it does make sense that if you played more of that, you would get used to a certain type of decision making, which is, assessing a visual situation and then making the choice of one direction or another very quickly. How well that really applies to higher level decision making is dubious at best.
Right, but it is the sort of study that's it's going to inspire a lot of people to write about it because it lets geeks say, "Hey, look, we're we're doing something useful here."
Well, even better, it lets the geeks say, it lets the Halo geeks point and laugh at the Sims,
right?
Yeah, man, I'm playing Halo so that when the stuff hits the wall, we'll be ready. You guys will just be walking around looking like idiots.
Complaining that you're hungry, but waiting for somebody to tell you to go eat.
Exactly. You change hats every time your mood changes. I don't understand. All right. Well, I was just going to once again bring up Mr. Blum's Bacon Odyssey post of the last fortnight, which was a good one. I like that. Actually incorporating the bacon into the French toast as an integral part of it.
Yes.
But I think, all right, so I think we've gotten through the breakfast stuff. We need to come up with something just earth-shatteringly strange and new.
Well, I had several ideas. I mean, one thing I want to do is I want to try making the burger again, but hopefully make it a little less chewy this time by pre-cooking the inside, because by the time the inside was fully cooked, before the outside was starting to get kind of chewy. So,
yeah, but as perfecting something, that's great. As a post, it's not gonna burn up the internet.
That's possibly true.
I like Jenny suggesting either brownies or bacon chip cookies.
Well, yeah, those are certainly ideas. I've also been considering things that I could wrap in bacon. I was thinking about doing a corn dog, but wrapping the hot dog in bacon first.
and then dipping it and frying it.
Yeah.
That could be special. That could be very special.
I was also thinking that I could just do like bacon on the inside if I could figure out a way of doing that. And so that it wouldn't be a corn
bacon
dog. Sort of, I don't know exactly what I would call it.
But. Okay. Here. All right. So here, I think structurally you could do this. What you do, and this would take a lot of toothpicks to build. What you do.
Stoking like a civil engineer. Yes.
Absolutely. I'm totally there on the structural. So you take a piece of bacon and you roll it up into I don't know what you call it, a roll. You roll it up tightly so it's like an inch in diameter or whatever, and you stick the toothpick through it laterally. Mm. Okay, and so you do like I don't know 6 or 8 of those, so that then if you line them up side by side, it's like the length of a hot dog, and then you take a large like a kebab stick and run it down the middle.
Right. And then okay. Dip it in.
Well, I think you have to pre-fry that.
Yeah, probably
to true. Get the bacon cooked in the middle, then dip it, then fry the outside. And there you go.
Mm. Yeah.
And then take the small toothpicks out and you just have the kebab stick up the middle.
Right. And then, you know, get my blood pressure checked every day for a month.
But, yeah. Exactly. But that's it, man. We do this, you license it, and it becomes the next big, you know, county fair, you know, funnel cakes, bacon on a stick. It's
yeah. I think I may have to do that.
I can picture. I'm actually picturing it in my mind right now. I want it.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to do that.
Okay, good.
Ken is going to start his own Great Bacon Odyssey.
I'm not even going to write about it. I'm just going to do it.
I'm working on a book proposal based on it. So
there you go. That's what we got to do. We will make it happen.
And I've got the website. So.
Oh.
I've got the domain name. GreatBaconOdyssey.com. That's mine. There's nothing there.
But
I own it.
Yeah, you should at the very least go ahead and throw up a WordPress install and then go ahead and cross post each of the ones that you've done on Geeked Out there.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Of course, nobody knows about it. Well, I guess they do now, but you know,
the cat's out of the bag. Oh my god!
So this is the
and you can already sell advertising to the National Pork Board.
That's true.
You are, man, you know what? You're in the pocket of the National Pork Board, aren't you, man? It's a big pork conspiracy.
Yeah, I gotta say I was a little disappointed that they didn't even send me anything when I titled the Bacon Burger post, you know, bacon, the other crispy brown meat.
Yeah.
I was really hoping they would send me a letter like they did to Think Geek.
Would have been lovely. Yeah, get a nice takedown notice. Or
yeah, but nothing. Oh well.
Oh, D. Bradley Baker is tweeting about Clone Wars.
Cool. Awesome. Very cool.
All right, guys. Well, this has been totally enjoyable. But I think we're about done. So I want to thank you, Jonathan. Thanks for stopping by. Hope your kids are feeling better tomorrow.
Hope so.
Thank
you.
Yeah, I hope so too.
And Matt, thank you, of course.
You're welcome, and thank you for hosting as ever.
Absolutely. And thanks to Jenny in the chat room. I think we lost Dan Donahue. It's probably time for him to go to work tomorrow right now in Australia. So he was probably checking in while he ate breakfast. Yeah, he lives in the future. thank you, gentle listeners, for checking in with us again. And this has been the Geek Dads, episode number 76. I'm Ken Denmead, editor of geekdad.com. And feel free to stop by the blog, check us out. Make sure you check out geekmom.com as well, our new companion site, what we like to call the Geek Dad's better half. And we're waving goodbye to Jenny in the chat room. She waved bye to us.
Bye, Jenny.
And we will see you all next time. So long.
See ya. So long, everybody.
Bye.
Geek Dad. Geek Dad. Geek Dad. Geek Dad. We'll be right back.